Welcome to Focal Points, an Enphoto podcast hosted by me, Dori Howell. This is the place to be if you want to ditch the overwhelm in your business and start creating a business that you love. Welcome to the Focal Points podcast. I'm your host, Dori Howell, and I am so glad that you are here with us today. And I'm excited to introduce you to my guest today for a multitude of reasons. And I really hope that you find this conversation beneficial to your business. Kimberly Tara is a certified public accountant and certified tax coach with a private practice down in New Orleans. Well, it's down in New Orleans for me. It may not be for you, but I say down in New Orleans, right? And she and her business provide a boutique tax experience to small business owners who are interested in protecting their assets with smart tax strategies. But that's not all. She's the published author of the book Write-Offs to the Rescue. She's a host of the CEO Moms Building Wealth podcast. She's the creator of the Wealth Learning Lab that supports business owners as they plan their tax journey. But wait, there's more. She's also a mom of an adorable gaggle of four kids, all of them under the age of seven, with no outside help except for her fabulous husband. And she's literally one of my favorite people that I wish I could spend more time with. So Kimberly, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. That's you. She was like, I have your bio and you interjected some things in there that I don't even talk about for myself. So Dori over here being my hype girl. Thank you for that.
Well, now I had to do a little digging, and some of this isn't on the website, but because we talk outside of these things, I knew about them. So I did my research.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's good. Well, I'm super glad that you're here. I'm so excited. And I brought you here for a few reasons, like I spoke of. But before we dive into all of that, you know, we have a lot to dive into. I was hoping you could share just a little bit more about yourself and your journey and how you started what is very specifically a boutique accounting business.
Yes, because it wasn't always that way. Let's talk about that. So I was actually a chemical engineering major in college. I don't know. Did you know that?
Oh my gosh. I think I did know that, but that's such a traumatic thing that I probably like shoved it out of my mind immediately.
Okay. So I was a chemical engineering major. It's how I met my husband and it's why I went to Auburn, but I figured out that it wasn't for me. And I'm grateful that I figured out 3.5 years in that that wasn't for me. Some people were like 3.5 years, but you know, I'm grateful because we've got people in life that are 50 realizing that they're not doing their life's calling and their life's passion. So I switched to accounting. I did my stint in public accounting, which most CPAs do, and realized that it wasn't for me. And my moment when I realized this was that I wanted to make partner. So most partners in the medium-sized firm that I was at, they make partner in about the 10 to 12 year mark after starting their journey.
Oh, you had to put in 10 to 12 years?
Yes, but I was going to do it in 8 or 9 because
well, of course you were.
Because I'm a high achiever. So I was so I was like, okay, so I'm going to do it in 8 or 9 because I'm going to beat the next youngest person.
Sure.
But at the same time, I was thinking about like, well, you know, I want a family. I want to make sure that I'm a really present mom. And I was watching this manager FaceTiming her kids to sleep for the 4th night in a row, I think it was, during tax season. And I was like, well, I don't want that to be me, and I don't want that life for my kids and my family. And it dawned on me that my professional goals were in direct competition with my personal goals. And so it was like, okay, well, that doesn't make sense. And of course, hands down, I was going to choose my personal goals. You know, I'm a very professionally motivated person, but I was choosing my personal goals any day over my professional goals. So that was when the light bulb went off that like, maybe I'm not going to stay in public accounting. I'm also the child of two entrepreneurs. So I knew at some point I was going to own my own business. So it's like, Kimberly, this doesn't make sense. You're going to make partner in 8 or 9 years, but you're going to have your own business, but you're going to be a present mom. It wasn't all adding up. So
it doesn't quite seem like the recipe for success
there. Yeah, I'm a bad person. The numbers did not compute, right? So I was like, okay, well, so what am I going to do? And it came up, it all sort of happened at the right time that my husband and I were ready to move back from Atlanta to New Orleans. And so I was like, okay, well, this is a good time to start my own practice. We didn't plan to be pregnant, but we apparently were pregnant at the time that I gave my resignation in public accounting and was, I already formed the business. So I was like, I guess we're just doing this. So I started my business. I was 10 weeks pregnant at the time. And It was a lot, right? I felt everything that I think most new business owners felt. I was saying yes to anyone who was willing to work with me because I was so nervous from leaving that full-time paycheck and being mm-hmm. out on my own and being responsible mm-hmm. for my income. So I said yes to everyone. If it was an accounting whatever task, I did it. I said yes to it. And so I was over six figures in the first 12 months, but by 18 months in, I was completely burnt out.
And you had a baby in the middle of it.
I had a baby in the middle of it, right?
Let's not forget the fact that, you kind of had a major life event, your first baby in the middle. You basically had two babies.
I did.
Within a year.
I did.
You had your business baby and you had your baby baby.
I did. And so I had to step back and say, like, this isn't what I envisioned when I thought about having my own business, right? Mm-hmm. So I say it was about early 2018, didn't know it at the time, but apparently I was 3 weeks pregnant with our next child. But mm-hmm. I say that certified tax coach found me / I found certified tax coach. The timing was right. I was ready to sort of do a reiteration on my business, and something needed to change. I knew that I couldn't keep going because my clients were getting a better version of me than my family was getting, and mm-hmm. that was backwards. And I wasn't loving all of the work that I was doing. So mm-hmm. I went to the academy, is what they call it, to become licensed as a certified tax coach. And in learning those advanced tax strategies that I was so excited to bring back to my clients, they also mm-hmm. had a little portion where it was sort of like the first business coaching that I was ever exposed to. And I had someone in there ask me, how much time are you driving around to clients every week? And I added it up and it was 12 hours per week.
Ouch, 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 ouch.
And I wasn't even charging them for it. I was driving around for mm-hmm. free. So that just really opened my eyes to value-based pricing and what we were doing for our clients. And Dory, I was so much more excited to bring my clients advanced tax strategy over bookkeeping or tax prep mm-hmm, because mm-hmm. that my clients didn't honestly see the value in it. They just saw this tax return as something that the IRS and the US government tells them that they have to do. But mm-hmm. in saving them money through proactive tax planning, they saw the value in that. They wanted mm-hmm. that. And I loved giving them that. And mm-hmm. so through that was really the journey that started my business down this path of we still provide the most premium client experience that our clients have ever had with a CPA, but we're giving them this incredible value and giving them this opportunity to put dollars back in their pockets, whether mm-hmm. that's so they can reinvest in their business, so they can pay off their mortgage, so that they can fund their kids' college tuition. That has been so much more impactful for them. And honestly, it's been more impactful for me. Yeah. And it just allowed us to really hone in on what we do well and continue to lean into that premium client experience.
I love this so much because I think photographers as creatives, we think that we are the only industry that experiences some of these things from opening our doors, photographing anything and everything that requests us, undercharging, mm-hmm. not understanding the value for our time, being taken advantage of, being put in situations that we're unfamiliar with, and just really just becoming overworked and sacrificing our family, not realizing we started our business to be able to support the life that we want to live, but now all of a sudden it's overtaking our life. Yes. And we think that this is just something that is unique to us as creatives and as photographers. And I love it when I get to talk to professionals in other industries to see this is such a common thing to almost every entrepreneurial journey, especially at the beginning when you're so focused on the fact like, I want this business, I want it to be a success, but oh my gosh, where is my next job going to come from? Yes. So I better take everything that I'm offered yes. now. And then through business maturity, a little bit of growth, a little bit of refining, you start to see that it doesn't have to be that way, but it can take a long time to figure this out. And the fact that you were able to figure this out pretty much under two years is huge because I know people who have been in business for 10 years and they still haven't been able to find out how to make this work. Yeah. So you say that the certified tax coach class was really your eye-opening, heart-opening experience where you're like, I don't want to do what I've been doing anymore. It's not fair to me. It's not fair to my family. It's not fair to my husband, to my coaches, and everything that I want to do. I really need to shift. Did you find that shift difficult in starting to say no to people?
Yes.
And do what you really wanted to do?
Yes. And for two reasons. So from the financial perspective of like, I'm telling someone who is willing to pay me money, I'm telling them no. So you have to have the confidence in yourself that that you're going to find the right client, that the next client that comes along is going to be the right fit. And I want to lead with, Dory, I'm a very ethical CPA. So if I didn't feel like someone was aligned, I was still going to tell them no, but this was taking no to a different level of like, you want payroll and we're not offering payroll. Sometimes you're like, maybe I should just offer payroll because then they'll pay me. Right. So having the confidence to say, no, we don't offer those services anymore. Mm-hmm. We can help you here with this service. This is how we best serve you. So that's the first no. The second no is the boundaries no, and saying no to people that you might like, or saying no. We could also talk about this too, but also saying no to things that weren't the most important right now. I think as women, especially as moms, especially, we have a hard time saying no. And I remember that was January of 2018. And in September of 2018, my oldest, he was about to be two. So he was going to go to a little preschool and they sent the room mom papers home. And I told my husband, I said, throw them in the garbage before I put my name on there.
Yeah. No, thank you.
Because I'm a yes person. I'm a helper. I'm a three-wing two. I've got that helper in me. And I was like, I can't do that right now. We're having another baby. I'm in this iteration of my business, taking on, you know, slowly letting go clients that were no longer a fit, bringing in new clients. Throw those papers away before I say yes. And so there are so many reasons in our lives that saying no is very good and it's very beneficial. And saying no and having that boundary can truly open better doors for us in the long run.
But that doesn't mean it's easy. And I think that's like, there's so many things we do in our business because we're owning our own business, right? Why shouldn't everything be easy? But when it comes to really defining these things and saying no to clients, for example, I had someone call me the other day who wanted a newborn session. I did newborn sessions for 10 years. I'm absolutely capable of doing a newborn session. I don't want to do a newborn session. There's nothing I can do with a newborn session as far as promoting my services. I don't want referrals from newborn sessions. If you're going to have to pay me a lot of money if you want me to come in and wrap up your baby naked for a couple hours, like, and bring everything. Like it's going to cost a lot. And no one's going to want to pay me that much. And so I literally just said, thank you so much for your call. That is not the type of photography that I do anymore. And it was a referral from somebody. So it was even more like, I didn't want to let anybody down,
but I'm just like, this, not letting people down.
Right.
That's a big one.
But I'm like, could I use the money? Yeah. Do I have time to do the session? Yeah. But it's like, no, Dory, this is not what you want to do anymore. You are going to regret taking this job. And so I told her no. And then she asked for a referral. And I said, well, you can try this one, or this one. I have no experience with their services. They do beautiful images. They're nice women. So I was able to refer her to someone who does do that. And hopefully one of them booked her. But even after I hung up the phone, after doing this for 15 years now and saying no to this client, I felt like, oh, was that the right, was that the right thing? Like maybe I just should have taken it. Like you go through that and I don't think that ever goes away.
It doesn't. And you have like, you're feeling like you were probably thinking, like you said, like the financial side, right? Like, should I have turned that job down? And the emotional side, am I letting someone down? There are so many mixtures of emotions that you go through.
Right. So for me, I don't think that will ever end. I know in my business, and it may not be for yours, like, but for my business, I'm going to get called for weddings and newborns until I'm no longer in business, even though I don't show any of that stuff in my marketing, my social media, or on my website anymore. I'm going to get called for those types of jobs, and I have to be okay just saying no. That's not what I want to do. So when you made this pivot, did you find that you had to completely rebuild your clientele in a new way, or did some of your old customers move with you?
So I was very, and this is going to shock you, I'm glad you're sitting down, I was very strategic with how I approached this.
No, really?
I was very strategic with how I approached this. So first I made sure that like I had everything ready to go, right? I'm working on not being a perfectionist. I just have high standards. And so I made sure that I had everything ready to go.
Now, total side note, because I know Kimberly a lot better than anybody else listening to this podcast. She is a recovering perfectionist that hasn't really started recovering yet. But I have great hope for her in the future that that will, you know.
And Dory's helping me with that. We're working on it together. So I started with letting go of clients who were maybe only paying me like $60 to $100 a month. And it wasn't worth the mental space that I had to occupy to make sure that I was serving them, because I was serving them like a $500 client a month. So I had like two or three of those where I wasn't really losing a ton of revenue from them, but I was freeing up a lot of time and mental space. So that was the first step that I took. The next step that I took, and so through that time, I was able to say, okay, I can let three clients go that are maybe only paying me $250 a month, and I'm going to replace them with a client, one client who's going to pay me $500 a month, right? On this new system, on this new way that I am serving clients. So that was the first step. The second step was letting go of clients who were maybe paying me well, but were not aligned with my values, my vision, where I was going, how they listened, how they took my advice, because that's really important for me. If you're paying me for my advice and my knowledge, and my advice and knowledge is really dang good, if you're not listening, we're not aligned. So that was the next iteration, was even though they were paying me well and it wasn't, it was worth it, I wanted to let them go because, again, I wanted to free up that energy and that mental capacity and mindset that I had. So that was the next iteration of letting clients go. And by that point, I had really brought on new clients for these new services at my value-based pricing, really stepping into my confidence of what I was delivering. And then after that, it was kind of, okay, now what about the clients that I want to keep? I like them. We work well together, but I need to raise their rates. I need to get them up to where my new clients are coming in. And so that was the third iteration. And after that, I felt very confident in where my practice was. And I've done another iteration in 2022 and this year, right? Kind of redefining our offers and our packages and not having everything customized. So I think to a certain extent, we're always doing these iterations in our business, but that's the biggest one that I've definitely done to date. The others have been minor tweaks.
Did you find that when you went, because this is a big trigger for photographers, raising rates, people get very up in all their emotions and all their feelings when they know they need to raise their rates. And that is why photographers traditionally don't raise their rates. And then all of a sudden, 5 years later, they realize that they're paying for stuff like they're not profitable anymore because all the other expenses have gone up and they haven't raised their rates. They haven't even kept up with inflation, right? So last year, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, last year, I think the inflation rate was around 6%.
Yeah, it hovered between 6 and 8. Yep.
6 and 8%. So at the beginning of the year, I'm like, if you don't give yourself at least a, you know, I think I use 6%, a 6% bump in prices, you are giving yourself a pay cut. Yep. You cannot do that. You have to be aware of these things. Even if you don't want to raise your rates, you have to raise your rates. Everybody else has raised their rates. You have to keep up with things. Otherwise, you are going to become less and less profitable in your business. And you're basically giving yourself a pay cut. You don't deserve a pay cut. So when you approach these clients that you had gone through the process of, these are the people that I want to work with, these align with my business values and practices and so forth, and you approached them and said that you were going to raise your rates, was that hard for you to do? And how much pushback did you get with that?
So it's very hard because it's funny. Sometimes I'm okay with confrontation and sometimes I'm not okay with confrontation. More importantly, I don't want to let people down. And that wing two helper comes out in there that I feel like if I don't want to be told no, I also don't like that. So for me, I approached it as a conversation with them. Most of my clients, I was still having monthly, weekly communications. So I elected to do it in a conversation instead of in an email and then recapping it in an email. I understand that can be a little bit different for photographers if you're not having as much one-on-one consistent interaction with your clients.
Yeah, but like, did you see on my story when I posted that thing from Gary Vee yesterday? Did you backtrack that much?
Where I didn't Gary Vee was no. even,
Yeah, Gary Vee was even saying that, he posted it yesterday, he's like, for the important conversations, you need to be talking to people basically in a conversation, yes, or on the phone or face-to-face. Do not leave important conversations to text messaging or email. 100%. And that goes against this culture's idea of that you can do everything you need to do in a text message. Mm-hmm. When I've been saying for years, and I've been telling photographers for years, get on the phone.
Yes.
Get on the phone. I call every one of my inquiries back.
Yes.
I literally pick up the phone. As soon as the email comes in, I hop on the phone and say, hey, you just submitted an inquiry. How can I help you? What are you looking for? That type of thing. And I know I book way more business because I put my voice behind the inquiry. They can hear me. They know beyond a shadow of a doubt after that conversation that I know what I'm talking about, that I can satisfy their needs, and we've met on a price that's appropriate for the job at hand. And I book most of my business that way. So I love the fact that you're saying, hey, you need to have this conversation.
Yes, and like, we did, right? Instead of just, mm-hmm, we followed up with an email so that we had everything documented in writing, but the conversation, mm-hmm, initiated either face-to-face if I was there or a phone call. And I actually really didn't get a lot of pushback. I simply explained to them that I was so grateful for them being with me for so long, that I love having them as a client, that I've grandfathered them in for 1 year, 2 years, whatever that looked like. And, you know, we want to continue serving them in the highest capacity. We want to continue providing them with this experience. And with, mm-hmm, that comes some increased hard costs, but also the value that we are continuing to bring. Mm-hmm. And so we would love to continue working with you as a client. Here is the proposed new rate. And it was gradual, right? It wasn't like we went from 500 a month to 2000 a month, right? It was right, maybe 500 to 1000. And we kept increasing slowly. But I think the most important part is I had already delivered the value to them for years. So, mm-hmm, so it really, mm-hmm, wasn't, I don't ever feel like I've had a hard sell to my clients. We have a 97% client retention rate because of the, mm-hmm, experience, mm-hmm, and the value that we provide. So it was a hard conversation for me. I actually don't think it was that hard of a conversation for them. It was like, okay, great.
Yeah, you probably built yourself all up in your emotions. What if they say no? What if they don't like it? Like all these what ifs, yes, that we do. And then we build it up so much. And then by the time it actually happens, like, oh, that was easier than I thought it would be.
Right? I had different scenarios, right, worked out. Like, do, yeah, you want me to show you the numbers? Do you want the spreadsheet? I've run the numbers for you to show you. Right? And they're like, no, I don't need the spreadsheet. Yeah.
I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm good. Okay. So what about taxes, specifically this? Because taxes, I just don't get this at all. I just don't get it. What do you find so interesting about the taxes and dealing with all the laws and the changing codes and all those types of things? Is it just a big puzzle to you, or what drew you to this?
That's exactly it. It's the puzzle. I love the challenge. So it's funny because we were just talking before we hit record how, like, I'm so grateful that we're back in school. My kids have routine again. Yeah. And I've become more of a lover of routine since having multiple kids, and we need that structure, but I actually hate it. I love coming in some days and just not knowing what's going to be thrown at me. The challenge, mm-hmm, of rapid fire questions. I'm an overthinker, so I don't want to hem and haw. I am a problem solver. I just, like, sometimes I don't know how to replicate what's in my brain and how it thinks, but my brain loves the puzzle. It loves the challenge, and it loves helping others. And I feel like with the tax strategy, with the puzzle piece of, and that's why, like, I don't like bookkeeping. I am here to tell you that I think bookkeeping is vital to the success of your business, whether you do it, mm-hmm, or whether you outsource it. And I'm a proponent of outsourcing because most business owners say, oh, I do it. I do a good job. No, they don't do a good job. No, they don't keep up with it timely. Mm-hmm. So I actually, mm-hmm, think that most business owners should outsource their bookkeeping. I just don't want to do it because I think it's boring. It's very routine. There's not, yeah, a lot that comes up that is challenging. And my brain is a very high strategy, logical, practical thinking brain. And so that's why I love it. And just, I mean, gosh, getting to save people tens of thousands of dollars, like, that's a pretty incredible impact that I can.
That's a big deal.
Yeah. When I get to deliver that news, that just lights me up. When I get to hear somebody say, I trust you, like, we hear that from our clients a lot, like, how much they trust us, how much they respect how we help them. And I don't know, there's just, I love it. And I love the puzzle. And I think that that's part of that, like, engineering background, that I wasn't meant, mm-hmm, to be an engineer, but I'm meant to be somebody who figures out pieces to the puzzle and doesn't back down from a challenge.
Got it. Got it. All right. Well, good for you that you love tax strategy. I'm so glad there's people in this world who love it so that I don't have
somebody's
to do it.
Somebody's got to do it, right?
Somebody's got to do it. Absolutely. Somebody's got to do it. So this is my last question, which I think is so very important, especially, you know, we're two moms. We've mentioned your kids. You know, I have a daughter and everything. And we also know now that you are a perfectionist. You're very much into systems and strategy and that type of thing. So I want to totally shift because I think it's so important. And you talk a lot about this in your podcast. And you talk a lot to a lot of different people as far as how they manage kind of this work-life balance thing, which I don't really believe that work-life balance is like a real thing. I think you have to just decide where you want to spend your time and everything. But what are some of your best tips about running your business and managing your home life that maybe some of our parents who are listening today could really learn from?
Yeah. Okay. I have a lot. So one thing that I think is very important is to ask for help. And Dory alluded to the fact that we don't really have a lot of help. And Dory's been on my little booty about that. But we do have some help, right? So first is just like having honest conversations with your spouse about what you need, right? And I'm very thankful and very blessed to have a supportive husband. Now, he's not going to notice all the things that need to get done. Mm-hmm. And so if I wait for him to notice all of the things, I'm really speaking more to the moms and women out here. He's not going to notice the things that need to get done. But if I ask nicely or remind him that such and such needs to get done, he's more than willing to help and be a team player and be 50-50 with me. We do have some help at the house. We've had a little bit here and there, and we have a little bit right now, so that's really good. But asking for help, we struggle to find good help, but I'm not opposed to asking for it. So either figuring out like what are some things. I really love the book Who Not How. I don't know if you have you read that one, Dory?
I haven't. Okay.
Dan Sullivan.
Dan Sullivan.
Really, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, and Ben Hardy. Really, really love that one. And so whether that's outsourcing in your business or outsourcing in your home, and it doesn't have to be everything, but picking little things, I really do think that that's important. And it's a hard mindset to get into, but it's a really important mindset to get into. The other thing is our children are required to help around the house, and they are only 6, 4, 3, and 1.
Vivian, maybe not so much.
But even our 3-year-old is required to help, right? Like everybody, because they have to learn that mom is not the only person who does things around here. And I have 3 boys and a girl. And so I also feel that it is my duty to send them off into the world to their future spouses, to not be sponges and leeches, to be proactive partners who help and support their future partners in life. That is very important to me, so that they know how to do laundry. They know how to do dishes. So everybody has a responsibility in our house. And we have open conversations with our kids about being a member of this family, and no, they don't get money for it. If they do a chore, which is above and beyond the call of duty of a 6 or 4-year-old, we'll give them a buck or 50 cents or something like that. But they help set the table. They help take the recycling out. They help empty the dishwasher, doing the utensils. They clean up their toys, right? They are participating members of our family, and that's going to continue. That I don't see that changing. They will just get more responsibilities. And so I think that that is something that has really been a game changer. My mom, one time, she was like, she came and she saw the 4-year-old moving clothes from the washing machine to the dryer. We have the front loader so he can reach. And she's like, I can't believe you're making him do that. And I'm like, he's perfectly fine at 4 years old to move some clothes. It was just towels moving from the washer to the dryer, right? Like, I don't have to do everything. And that's been a really hard realization for me. But I think that that is a reason that God gave me 4 kids, because I don't know that I would have come to that realization ever, certainly not as fast as I have in having 4 kids, because with the birth of each child, I've become abundantly aware of just how little time I have, how little time I have with each of them, how little time I have to enjoy the memories with them. And that has made me intentional about the choices that I make with my time, with my life, how I do things, how I approach things. I've become much more intentional about that.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where you realize like, okay, I have some free time, quote unquote, free time. Do I want to be doing laundry or do I want to hang out with my kids? Like that type of thing. And I have become very intentional lately, and it took me a long time. I was a workaholic for a long time. In my previous company, I worked weekends, I worked nights. Like I woke up on face in my Facebook group, like that type of thing. It took me a long time to decompress from that and realize when I sign off on Friday, I am not signing back on again to work until Monday morning. I'm not doing it. I'm not checking. I might check my email just because I check it for personal things too, but it's made I have made a conscious choice of how I'm going to spend my time. I don't want my daughter growing up, and she's 15 now, soon to be 16. I have basically two more summers with her. I do not want her to remember that mom was just always sitting at her computer in her office every time she came down from her room. Cause I mean, my office door is right here. Mm-hmm. And it was very easy to feel the pull of that, to come in here weekends, evenings, you know, dinner was late, all that type of thing. But I really had to work hard to break. It was an addiction. Yeah. It was some, and because that time, I can't say that when I was working all those extra hours, I was that much more productive.
Yes.
Right? It was just something that I felt this urge to do this, like, I don't know if it's a responsibility or what it was. Like I needed to do it, but it was because I needed to become more responsible with my time during the week when I had it. And so that I could spend that time with my family. So I had to make a choice. And it really is, I shut the door on Friday and I'm not coming back in here till Monday. If I can't solve it on my iPad in 30 seconds over the weekend, it's not going to get handled.
I love that.
Because, you know,
I'm working towards that. Things. So I'm a little bit behind you. I am working on having better boundaries. And it was really humbling. Like, you know, when you get the things, the pre-K, it's like, you know, about my mom and, you know, they write what you do and, you know, they're so fun and so cute. And
she works all the time.
She works on her computer. Like, what's her job? On the computer, right? Because they can see me in my office. And I also listened to, I don't know if it was a podcast. I don't know what made me realize this, but it was like, I would set them up with Play-Doh or activities at the kitchen table, and I'd work on my computer. And I thought, I'm doing so great. I'm here with them. I've got us all set up. We're all together. But what they saw was me paying attention to my computer and not paying attention to them, even mm-hmm. though I can multitask and I can talk to you
sure
playing
you can.
Play-Doh. But they saw me looking at the computer. And so now mm-hmm. it's very rare that my computer leaves the office. Now I come back into my office at night because I'm in a different season than you, Dory, where mm-hmm. I'm done at 3 o'clock because I've got school pickup and I'm spending time with them from three to eight is family time, right? So from 8 to 10, I'm usually rolling back in my office. And that's when mm-hmm. you might have been working from 3 to 5, right? I'm making up for that at 8 to 10.
We go till 6 here. That's when, well, actually 5:30, because 5:30, now listen, this is something that's totally different in my house, total sidebar. If I don't have dinner on ready to go when that child walks in the door after being at school all day and at a 3-hour cheer practice,
she's hungry.
She will literally start eating her arm.
Yes.
She is so hungry. And I have found that I can make whatever I want with no complaints on weeknights because she will eat anything. Yes. She is starving.
I used to have two meals on cheer practice days. We practiced twice, 2 or 3 times a week, and my mom used to mm-hmm. feed me before practice and then would have another meal waiting because our practices were late. And so I would have a huge mm-hmm. plate waiting for I ate twice. I ate two dinners on cheer days.
Yeah. So she'll come in, she'll be done, she'll be coming at 6:10. Then we have about 40 minutes to turn things around. And she doesn't want to eat a heavy meal before she goes back out for cheer practice number 2. But when she comes in at 10 o'clock, she's starving. So all of that has kind of shifted. And now that school's back in session, the times of day when things get done is a little bit different. Mm-hmm. And we have the luxury of being our own business owner. So we can create that. It's, you know, if you get to a point where your kids aren't eating dinner till 10, who cares? That's what works for your family, right? So we're in that like start of school shift where we're remembering, oh yeah, dinner has to be ready at 6:10. Yes. I need to stop working at this time. I can go back and visit after mm-hmm. when she's in practice in the evening if I need to. That way I'm still present with her when she's here to be
exactly.
present with. But then when she's doing her own thing, she doesn't care what I do. So it is what it is.
I'm mommed out at the moment. You're gonna yours is like, bye mom. And I'm like, I'm gonna change my name from mom because I'm so tired of hearing the word mom
Mom. Oh yeah. My kid is like, peace out, mom. See you later. Like it's when she gets her driver's license, we know that she's not going to get a car right away. We've made that perfectly clear. Like, you are not the kid when you turn 16 that you're going to get a car delivered to you. And that's just a conscious choice that we mm-hmm. have made to try and control just control things a little bit. So she understands that. But I mean, she's been doing her own laundry for herself since she was about 6 years old. I have a mini me. She is so independent.
I love that.
All of us, like, she'll be like, I'd be like, what are you doing in your room? Oh, I totally rearranged all the furniture. And we're not talking just like a chair here or there. We're talking about she's moved her dressers into the guest room next door and all by herself. Whoops. All by herself. Like,
I love that. That's me.
No help from us. And we're like, you know, you could have called and asked for help. Mm-hmm. I'm good.
I know. But that can be, you know? So the only thing I would say to that is like, sometimes I feel like my husband, I'm like, well, you could offer to help. He's like, well, you never want help or you never ask for help. And I'm like, well, it'd be nice if you offer. And so we have conversations like that because I've conditioned myself to be so independent, so resourceful, so take care of everything. And it was fine when it was just me. And it was fine when it was just the two of us. But now that we have four kids, I'm like, no, dude, you got to step it up. You know, like this is us together. And so that's been some interesting conversations that we've had to have along the way as that's changed. And I'm like, I would love to do it all. I can't do it all.
Yeah, you can't. You need that. You need that help. Wherever that help comes from, if you're a single parent, finding your people that can come in and help you. You know, I know that you have your parents that are close to you, so they can help. When my mom was alive, she was a great help to me as well. And my husband's mom, I can call on her, and I have sisters and outside help. And when my daughter was little, that was really, really important. Obviously, we're in very different phases, and you'll get there, and then you'll realize, oh, they don't call me mommy anymore.
I know. That's why I try not to complain in this season. And you know what's funny, Dory, is this kind of just came up for me, but you know that saying, it takes a village, and we use that in, like, when we have kids and things like that? I think that that's applicable in our businesses, too. Like, sometimes it takes a village. Like, I think that sometimes we can go it on our own. And I think that that's totally okay. If your vision for your business is just you or maybe you and one other person, but I think it's also okay to say that, like, I want more for my business, but in order to have more for my business, I need that village in my business too. And it can't just be me.
Yeah. I think we were in the same room listening to the same person when somebody said, you know, you as a solopreneur or you as someone with outside help and me and my team of five people, you will never be able to, the term I think was win against me because I have all this help. And I don't want to look at it as winning and losing because that's not what it is. But you will never ever be able to do as much as by yourself as you will with a village.
Right.
Whether that's employees, outsourcing, all of those certain things. And I'm a huge proponent of outsourcing. So when you were talking about bookkeeping, yes, a lot of photographers do their own bookkeeping. Should they be doing their own booking? I don't believe they should. A lot of photographers try and do their own taxes. Should they be doing their own taxes? No. A lot of photographers do their own editing. Should they be doing their own editing? In my opinion, depending on the type of work you do, probably not. Leave that to the person who wants to stay up to date on your Photoshop updates and the beta and the AI and everything that's coming across. Let's a professional who's good at keeping up with those things, keep up with those things. And you work on gaining those clients, doing your marketing, establishing those great client relationships, serving your clients well, where you're going to earn the most time. You spending time learning Photoshop, someone else can do that for $12 an hour, $15 an hour. Your time is much better served in other ways to make your business grow.
Yes.
And you need a village to do it.
Yeah. I'm actually leaning that into that now. We're hiring another position and it's very scary for me to say, like, I'm going to give them some ownership of some of the tax things that I've always loved. But I'm also really excited to do that because I'm like, I know she's actually going to do a better job. Like, my goal is for her to move into being what we are going to call a tax education specialist internally for our team and externally for our clients and the people that we share our education with. And I'm like, that excites me that I can hand that off, even though I love it, even though there is a piece of me that loves learning that tax education and keeping up with everything. I'm going to give her that ownership and let her give me the highlights so that I can stay in my zone of genius with the client relationships, with the marketing endeavors. And it's very scary, but I'm also really excited by it.
Yeah. When you can get to a point in your business where you can realize, you know what, I can give this to someone and they're going to do it better than I can do it. That's a huge, huge step in growth because creatives don't like doing that. Oh, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. I can edit quicker, so I should do it. I can do this better. Or it doesn't. No, let it go. let someone else, give someone the opportunity to do it better than you can do it.
That is what I'm leaning into because it's really hard.
It is. It's so, so hard. Okay. I have kept you here long enough and I could keep you here all day, but we all have stuff that we need to do. But I would love to know, for those professionals who are, they don't want to do their own tax strategy. They don't want to do this for themselves. How can they work with you? How can they get in contact with you?
Yeah. So I love the voice DMs on Instagram. There is something about, we were talking about that connection, right? Like that is just who I am as a person. That really resonates with me. And that's how I love to connect with people. So I love the voice DMs on Instagram. You can follow me at Tara CPA Firm. You can also book a call through our website to get on a free consult call with me so that we can talk about your needs so that I can better understand where you're at, what you're looking for, and we can make sure that we're a good fit for you mm-hmm. and for me. That's just so important to me that we have a good fit. And we have three different ways that you can work with us. We do done-for-you services. I feel like, Dory, we are in this day and age where everybody wants to do the strategy or everybody wants to have an online course, but somebody still has to actually do the tax preparation for y'all. Mm-hmm. And we actually have a couple of photographer clients and they're some of my favorites, but they're also some of the hardest to wrangle when it comes to this because they're creative. They're like, oh, sorry, I missed our call. I was editing and I turned my phone off because I was in the zone. And so we've just learned to meet our clients where they're at, right? And so we've put a little few little things in place for our creative clients who mm-hmm. who need us to assist them, but they take the most beautiful photos ever, and so we're here to help them on the tax side. So I really love if you would come follow me over on Instagram and send me a DM so that we can chat.
Yep, absolutely. So on the show notes page for this podcast at focalpointspodcast.com, you're going to be able to see and click over to her Instagram, her website, all those different things so you can get in touch with Kimberly and her team. It's not always just her. It is her. She does have a team that helps her with that. So she's used to working with creatives. She knows that we are a special bunch. So definitely check her out if you need some help with your tax strategy. Well, Kimberly, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. This was one of my favorites.
I love that we've had a chance to connect and also just talk about some of these things that we've talked about behind the scenes, but let other people in on our conversations when it comes to when we're talking about business, some of the things that resonate around in our brain. Mm-hmm. So it's been super fun. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
All right. This has been the Focal Points Podcast brought to you by Enphoto. Now you can listen to a special that Enphoto is offering right now for your sample products. Thanks for listening and we will see you next week. As photographers, we know that the presentation of our work is just as important as the photos themselves. And that's why I'm so excited to be partnering with Enphoto and so thankful for their sponsorship of this podcast. They make beautiful handcrafted albums and they're perfect for showcasing your stunning images. And now, as a listener of the Focal Points podcast, you can get a 75% discount off your first sample album by signing up for an account using the link in our show notes. Don't settle for generic photo albums. Visit Enphoto Lab and focalpointspodcast.com and start showing off your work in a beautiful, beautiful way. Thank you for joining us today. Don't forget to head over to the show notes page at blog.enphoto.com/podcast. That's blog.enphoto.com/podcast. Get the download for this program and link to a wonderful, wonderful 75% off special for your first sample order from Enphoto. You don't want to miss it.